Well, hey, everybody, and welcome to the Wayfinders Church podcast. We're so glad you are joining in today for the show on social justice. Today, we're introing Jesus and nonviolence, a third way beyond either or opportunities. So before we jump into the show, first of all, I want to say Wayfinders Church is all about helping people find life by loving God and people. And we think that creates paths which lead people to life. So, of course, we have some things going on that I'd love to share with you. First of all, we are like 2 weeks away, less than 2 weeks away from Easter, which is a huge day in the life of the church. It's like the Super Bowl of Sundays. And And so we'd love to invite you, if you're a listener tuning in, we'd love to invite you to our weekend worship experience Easter Sunday, April 16th at 10 a.m. at the Kimbrough. We also have something cool happening at the end of the month. Every time there's a fifth Sunday, we don't do the weekend worship experience. We call it Serve Weekend, and we have some opportunities to serve in the Donut Dash, supporting the San Marcos Police Department. And also, we've partnered with some local people to put on a benefit event for Wallace Middle School, and it's a Family Friday, and it's free for the community. It includes a glow dodgeball tournament, wacky field games for your whole family, and a movie night on the lawn. So you won't want to miss that at all. With that being said, this Saturday at 9 a.m. is the first Kyle Market Days of the year. And so Wayfinders has a booth going out there. It's going to be a lot of fun. We're going to have some family games and hangout stuff. And then everyone that comes through our booth will get a free planter where they can plant some seeds with their family and enjoy that, because it's springtime and why not? Because you deserve it. Okay, so we're just going to jump right in. We ended our first session on social justice talking about what it actually was, what it means to care for our world and its inhabitants. It's uniquely connected, and we'll get, you know, further on, we'll get to kind of explore some of that. But when we started asking the question, what does it really mean to care for the people of the world? And what we're faced with in our society, in our time right now, is rioting, immigration challenges, refugee challenges, and our response to it as Christians really and truly, it does absolutely matter. And so last time we actually said there's a rise of this religious left, which is actually seeking ways to harbor immigrants and offer amnesty. And you know, if you're not in a place where immigration is high, you may not fully understand the impact that it can have on families. But where we live in Texas, it's very real. It's very big reality. So with that in mind, I want to read just a couple of quick verses to you before we get into what I think is one of the most exciting things you're ever going to hear thematically from Scripture. The first verse is from Zechariah chapter 7. It says, "The Lord of hosts says, render true judgment, show kindness and mercy to one another. Do not oppress the widow, the fatherless, the sojourner, the poor. And let none of you devise evil against another in your heart." Let none of you devise evil against another in your heart. And Proverbs 31, it says, "Open your mouth for the mute, for the rights of all who are destitute. Open your mouth, judge righteously, defend the rights of the poor and the needy." So deeply rooted in the Hebraic tradition, which is where the, you know, the Christian tradition really is from, is a very, very deep and concerning call to care for those who don't have a voice, to care for those who are being oppressed, and to bring about generous love in situations where there isn't any. So back when I was in university, I was introduced to a professor and author named Walter Wink. And I got handed this little book. It's like when you get it, if you ever buy it, you'll be like, why is someone handing me this little book? I mean, it's a tiny little book, but it's called Jesus and Nonviolence. And then it says The Third Way. And it messed me up and changed my thinking about Jesus, about Christianity, and about our role as Christians in the world. So Walter Wink wrote that book, and along with several other books. One of them is called Naming the Powers. I would highly recommend these if you're interested at all in the conversation today. And Naming the Powers comes from what Paul calls the powers and principalities of this age. So powers, when Jesus defeats the powers of sin and darkness and defeats evil through the resurrection, it is actually empowering you and I to name what is evil, systemic evil, and overcome it through generous opportunity. So let me make this a little more concrete for you, and this should be fun. There's a little passage in Scripture that has been abused and abused and abused and abused and abused over and over again. And it's this passage where we hear the phrase, turn the other cheek, or go the extra mile. And I've heard it so many times where turn the other cheek is just a passive, like, oh yeah, just let things happen to you. Or go the extra mile, you know, being you got to give it 120%. You've got to do even more. And the reality of this is that's not at all what it's saying. Because what we often get reduced down to when we're faced with social justice issues, when we're faced with decisions, is we often think in either or scenarios. Either I do this or I do this. When in fact, we need to expand the options. There is a third way. And that little passage, you can find it in Matthew, in the Gospel of Matthew. I should clarify that for someone who is not familiar. And it's in Matthew chapter 5, starting verse 38. It says this: "You have heard that it was said, an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth," which is a direct quote from a couple of different passages in the Old Testament. "But I tell you, do not resist an evil person, for if anyone slaps you on the right cheek, turn to them the other also. And if anyone wants to sue you and take your shirt, hand over your coat as well. And if anyone forces you to go 1 mile, go with them 2 miles. Give to the one who asks you, and do not turn away from the one who wants to borrow from you." Sorry, I'm coughing. I've got a little allergy situation happening. So here's this little section of verses that Jesus just drops a bomb in the middle of this message that he's teaching. And we need to unpack it a little bit. We need to understand it. So it says, if anyone strikes you on your right cheek, okay, turn to them the other also. Now, in ancient Hebraic times, you have two hands, right hand, left hand. Right hand clean, left hand not clean. Left hand is what you wipe yourself with. It's all the unmentionable stuff. Right hand, it is not It is not like it's not used for anything that could be considered unclean or unkosher. It's for shaking hands and doing important decision making. That, you know, that's the kind of viewpoint that they have on this. So imagine with me for a second. You have been struck. Now, the particular way in which people strike back then is they backhand slap. And if I were to backhand slap you with my right hand, it would signify that you and I are equals, but I disagree. But if I backhand slapped you with my left hand, it would be saying you are beneath me. You're less than me. And if I were to open palm slap you, it would be you're so far beneath me, it's beyond words. And if I were to punch you, it would actually be a shame on me. So the scenario in which Jesus is painting is you get slapped with a hand that says you're beneath me. But in turning the other cheek, they then have two options. They can backhand you with their right hand, or they can punch you. And so in turning the other cheek, what we think as passive, we're actually creatively giving the other person opportunity to see you as human, to give back dignity where it had been taken. If someone saw you as less than them, this is the generous opportunity for them to consider the situation in its fuller gravity. So then it goes on a little bit further. Now, the Jewish people, in the midst of this message that Jesus is giving, the Jewish people are being oppressed, and they're being taxed in multiple ways. They're being taxed from their own religious system, the temple system. They're being taxed by their government, the Herod of the world, right? And they're also being taxed by their occupied empire in Rome. And none of those are regulated taxes. They are completely up to the whim of whoever is collecting them. So long as the entity that gets the money that they're asking for gets the amount they want, they don't care what beyond that a tax collector could collect. So here's what was happening. A triple taxation left unchecked was taxing people over 70%. Of their income. So the temple taxes were being hijacked. Herod was stealing money left and right to fuel personal glory and inlaid golden waterfalls in temples and all kinds of crazy stuff like that. And so on top of that, you had the Roman Empire taxing. So what would happen is if you were a landowner and you had your taxes due and you could not afford to pay them, you would mortgage your land to pay your taxes. But what if you had a bad crop and a bad year and you can't pay back that loan and it comes due? Well, when the loans defaulted, they would be sued. And in the ancient Near Eastern world, in the Levitical code, if you couldn't pay, you would give someone your shirt as a promissory note. Now, let's break this down a little bit further. They would only be wearing two articles of clothing, a shirt, an inner garment, and a coat, an outer garment. So if you give them both garments, what are you wearing? You're wearing your birthday suit. You're wearing nothing at all, which in their culture was shameful on the person who was not clothing the naked. Okay? So picture this scenario. You're triple taxed. You can't do anything about it. You have a bad year, and how ridiculous it is that you're being sued and someone is attempting to, through foreclosure, take your land from you. And what would often happen is people would have their land taken from them and then they would become day laborers in their own land. And you're in court and you give everything that you have and you walk away and you walk out naked. the person who was doing the suing then has this generous opportunity to see the problem in the scenario and treat you as a human, to give you space, to be gracious in the moment. And this goes all the way back, the shameful part of it goes all the way back to Noah. If you guys remember Noah and the ark, when the ark lands and everybody comes out, the rainbow and all that kind of stuff. Well, Noah gets drunk and then walks around the house naked, and the two of his sons make fun of him while he's naked rather than clothe him, and they get a curse. And so, again, it is on the person who is not doing the clothing to clothe, it is on the person who has clothing to clothe a naked person to clothe them. And so, if you were walking out of a courtroom completely naked, the whole community would be shaming you for doing the suing, rather than heaping shame on the person who's naked. And so what a generous opportunity that is. Now, the final one, the reason why we have mile markers today is because of the Roman Empire, and they produced mile markers so that they could force anyone who was in their occupied territory to carry their pack up to a mile. And so a battalion, a squadron, whatever, of soldiers would come through town. Now, each one of those soldiers is on their way to earning their citizenship in the Roman Empire by serving. And so what would often happen is soldiers would be conscripted from one country to go and control militarily another country, and only the officers were Roman. Everybody else was from one of the occupied territories. But if you wanted to not be taxed super heavily, if you wanted to have full rights, if you wanted to, you know, all those things, you had to become a citizen. And this was the easiest way to become a citizen. But that path was very, very strenuous and stressful. So you would, if you were a soldier, you would be expected to carry a pack of 70 to 80 pounds worth of gear across entire countries walking. Now, to make that easier, they created roads. And along the roads, they put mile markers so that they could, anytime they saw a farmer or peasant or somebody in a city, they could say, carry my pack. And they would have to carry that gear for them for no more than 1 mile. And if you carried it more than 1 mile, if you forced someone to carry it more than 1 mile, you were considered abusing your privilege of that rank. So imagine the scenario here. You're on the side of the road working your farm, and a soldier says, carry my pack for me. And you start carrying it. And, you know, when the mile gets up, usually they throw the pack down and there's probably some exchange of bitterness. And then, you know, you go back to your farm. But imagine if you keep walking. At first, probably the soldier's like, ha, sucker. But then as it keeps going, can you imagine if his squadron or battalion leader is looking back, like his lieutenant's looking back at him, like, is that the same guy? Is that the same guy carrying that pack? And then you could just see the eyes start rolling. Hey, man, give me my pack back. I don't want to get court-martialed. Because what would happen if they were abusing their power? They would be dishonorably court-martialed and never be allowed citizenship and have to pay back things to the Roman government that they didn't have. So, such a cool scenario where it's painted where the power is then shifted not from the powerful empire, but back to the lowly peasant, and it gives generous opportunity for them to see that peasant as a person, see themselves as that person. So in all three of these little stories, they present us with generous opportunity to see people as ourselves, to see ourselves in those scenarios, because it could just as easily be us. And so that's where social justice thrives. It says we have to get beyond either-or thinking. Either-or thinking no longer works. It just doesn't. And we can get trapped, right? And so we stand with those who are oppressed, who don't have rights, who are destitute, who are mute. We stand for the poor and the needy, the sojourner, the widow, the orphan. We stand with those who have not. But how we deal with it is not either we get violent against those people that are wrongdoers, or we do nothing and stick our head in the sand. We have to name what is evil and get beyond that dualistic way of thinking and get creative. When we give generous opportunity, it costs something. It costs you time. It costs you energy. But it's also engaging all of the senses, because you're not trying to pronounce judgment on a person. You're trying to pronounce judgment on the powers, the evil that is behind it, because it deals, rather than symptom management or attempting to knock out people who we may think are evil, it actually attempts to deal with the evil itself. Injustice deals with where it comes from, right? And so don't get trapped in dualistic thinking. It's not passivity or violence. And next time we're going to talk about the myth of redemptive violence and how we can get bought into this trap that just keeps escalating. You said that, well, I'll say this. And you said that, well, I'll hit you. And you hit me, so I'll hit you back. And violence never solves violence. And so we'll get into the myth of redemptive violence next time. But I want to specifically stop and say, are you trapped in dualistic thinking? What if there is a third or fourth or fifth or sixth option, and you have never expanded the options because you've never taken a step back to say, what are the powers? What is the systemic thing that is causing this type of behavior, this type of action, this type of attitude? And so the third way says, wait a second. Wait a second. There's so much more to this. Like, it's not just that person, it's not just that moment, it's bigger than that. And how do we give generous opportunity for people to come to terms and with reality and see themselves as it's just us, not us versus them, but we together? Because it's when we do that, when we start getting that third way of thinking beyond passivity or violence, beyond either or, when we stop living in dualism, and that is where we can creatively engage. So where in your life have you been saying it's either this or this? Where in your life, where in our world have you seen that? Is it politics?
Well, you got to be Republican or you got to be Democrat.
Really? There's not, like, more options?
Well, you know, you got to do something about this, or you just stick your head in the sand.
Really? There's not other ways to engage the conversation, to be proactive with the changes that we want to see in our world that treat people better? The third way will always produce better action. And that, my friends, is Jesus and the third way, thinking. So there are lots of resources out there if you want to learn more about it, if you want to start thinking, hey, how can I care for the world in more than either or terms and get creative? I would just Google search third way thinking, Google search Walter Wink and buy some of his books. And as always, much love, my friends.